He's often portrayed as a stereotypical two-dimensional villain, but that's far from the character Tolkien created. So what is the psychology of Sauron? Hi everyone, this is Robert. Welcome to In Deep Geek. If you like theories, background, history and lore about The Lord of the Rings, A Song of Ice and Fire and The Witcher, then this is the channel for you. Welcome. Many people who just watch the Lord of the Rings films, and even some who read the books, come away with the impression that Sauron is rather two-dimensional. This impression is only aided by the fact that we never actually see or encounter Sauron directly in the entire story of the Lord of the Rings. Yes, there are a couple of brief encounters via the Palantiri and the like, but he remains distant. He's there, lurking in the background, clearly wanting to invade everywhere and rule over an evil empire. But we don't get much by way of motivations. And at a more literary level, his absence allows us to place onto him our own conceptions of evil. Sauron is evil, and that's all there is to it. But I suspect that Tolkien would be aghast at the idea that Sauron was anything other than a fully realised character with many dimensions. So let's see what actually drove him. First, for context, we should probably acknowledge that although we think of The Lord of the Rings as being the main event, for Tolkien that was more of a random story branching off of his fully realised world and mythology. For him, the main event was what we know now as the Silmarillion and the wider world building around that. The Lord of the Rings was just the last chapter in Sauron's life, and Sauron was just one actor in the wider drama. So Sauron wasn't just a blank slate for Tolkien, an antagonist for the Fellowship and the Wise at the end of the Third Age. He'd been around for millennia, with a complex past and complex psychology. And we should probably start that with acknowledging that when Elrond talks about Sauron at the Council of Elrond, he says that nothing is evil in the beginning, even Sauron was not so. Indeed, Sauron is a Maia, which means that he was created by Eru, Ilúvatar, before time itself. He participated in the Song of the Ainur, singing creation into being, and he was one of those who chose to go down into Eru's new creation to guide and govern it, which perhaps tells us our first thing about Sauron. He is curious and proactive. Not all of the Ainur chose to go down, but he did. And once he did, his character really started to come out. He loved crafting and swiftly attached himself to Aula, the Valar who specialised in that, and he learned and grew. In this, he loved order and planning and organisation, which kind of makes sense. He hated chaos and confusion. I like to imagine this as a workman who loves an orderly workshop. All of his tools are arranged carefully in order. Everything is in its proper place, and he doesn't want anyone intruding into his zone and messing things around. Unless he can direct them and tell them exactly what to do and how. You know the kind of person. We might call them particular, or perhaps some other less charitable words, but not evil. And Tolkien was clear that Sauron wasn't evil at that point. Actually, he wasn't even called Sauron. He was Mairon, which means the admirable or the excellent. People respected him. And so he stayed for a long time. It's often easy to underestimate the length of this early period of time before the Children of Ilúvatar appeared, because the stories we know occur more in the later years, and even the Silmarillion skates quickly over them. But Sauron's Mairon era lasted a long time. But the fall inevitably came, and it started with his admiring Morgoth from afar. Morgoth was the Valar-level being who opposed all the rest of the Valar, and basically, during the early ages of Arda and Middle-earth, Morgoth had held his own. Sometimes the Valar had the upper hand and sometimes he did, but there was no doubt that he was individually the most powerful being there was. And he was also efficient, effective, focused. He made a plan, then acted on it. All things which Sauron found it easy to admire. Remember, his big passion was crafting, yes, but also order, organisation, planning. Compare Morgoth's efficiency with the Valar, who often found it hard to agree with one another on what to do, changed their strategy on how to deal with Morgoth several times and generally weren't very focused. So slowly Sauron fell into following Morgoth, in secret at first, then properly defecting to become Morgoth's chief lieutenant and commander of Angband, his fortress, which is when the elves started calling him Sauron, not Mairon, the abhorred rather than the admired. At which point, we can say that Sauron had indeed turned to evil, though Tolkien says he thinks still less evil than Morgoth, as Sauron was serving someone else, whereas Morgoth was just serving himself and his own will. Morgoth wanted to destroy the world, but Sauron just wanted to rule it. The next big turn in our understanding of Sauron's psychology comes at the end of the First Age. Morgoth was defeated by the Valar. Tolkien sets out what happens with Sauron in Letter 131 to Milton Waldman. Sauron repents in fear when the first enemy is utterly defeated, but in the end does not do as was commanded, return to the judgment of the gods. He lingers in Middle-earth. Very slowly, beginning with fair motives, the reorganizing and rehabilitation of the ruin of Middle-earth, neglected by the gods, he becomes a reincarnation of evil and a thing lusting for complete power, and so consumed ever more fiercely with hate, especially of gods and elves. There's a lot to unpack there. I did a whole other video on whether Sauron truly repented at this point. At the risk of spoiling that video, the answer is basically that he did, but only in fear. Sorry that he had done what he had done and been caught, but his heart was not truly changed, and he didn't go to face his judgment or punishment. What's important to us here is that he came to the conclusion that when the host of the Valar removed themselves from Middle-earth after that war of wrath, they had abandoned Middle-earth. To be fair, this is not an unreasonable conclusion. The Valar certainly didn't regularly visit after that. They hadn't abandoned it, sending Glorfindel in the Second Age and the Istari in the Third, to take two random examples, but they were definitely less directly engaged. And Sauron will have looked around and thought, who is going to provide the order and direction? It will all have felt very chaotic to him, a new island continent appearing, large parts of Middle-earth disappearing, the elves splintering into lots of different groups, the remnants of Morgoth's army hiding out in pockets throughout the land. Who was going to take control? He hated there being no control. And he will have looked around and realised that in the absence of the Valar, he was now the most powerful being in Middle-earth. He should take control. Tolkien wants us to understand that although this train of thought was very dangerous and led to him being, in Tolkien's words, the reincarnation of evil, this started with, Tolkien's words again, fair motives. Again, it comes back to control, and the further down his pursuit of control he went, the more he started to hate any opposition to it, which in the first place often meant the elves. So how to control the elves? Through magic, of course, and his original love of crafting. One of the offshoots of Sauron's love of control and order was his patience. He loved a good long-term plan where he was in charge. Hence the plan to trick the elves into forging rings of power with a secret magical link to a master ring of power that he would have. He would be able to control the minds and thoughts of the elves who wore their rings. And yes, the original plan was for all those rings to go to the elves. Giving them to dwarves and men was a later adaptation of the plan. Taking on the fair hue of Annatar, he spent 300 years with the elves of Eregion forging those 16 rings, then a further 100 years forging the One Ring back in Mordor, a plan that required great patience and one where he was in active control, not delegating to any minions. Of course, the plan failed. The elves became aware of the trick when Sauron put on his One Ring, and he had to resort to good old-fashioned invasion to claim back those 16 rings of power. He was pushed back eventually by the intervention of Numenor, so he now had another enemy, more who opposed the inevitability of his taking control over all Middle-earth. Still, he got the rings and distributed them to dwarves and men. The dwarves proved hard to control, but not so much the men. In fact, seeing the Nazgul much later shows us something of what Sauron originally intended for the elves. High-powered individuals completely under his control. Again, control. When he allowed himself to be captured and taken to Numenor, and then worked his way up to a place of influence where he could push the Numenoreans to do things that would lead to their destruction, we see Sauron's default approach again during this age. He needed control, which meant planning and seeing through those plans himself. Any who opposed he hated, and when his plans failed, he responded with deadly force. Sauron never saw conquering and invasion as his first and best plan. Him doing things himself, trying to control others, was always his first and best plan. But things did change quite a lot for Sauron in the Third Age. The Sauron we see in The Lord of the Rings is a psychologically different person to the Second Age version. His need for control is still there, and his hatred of those who oppose him, but they have been tempered by his inability to take a physical form for much of the age. He could no longer do everything himself, and without the One Ring, he was vulnerable. So instead of doing everything himself, he was forced to rely on others to lead on his plans. Witness the Witch King's work to destroy the Kingdom of Arnor, then diminish Gondor during the Third Age. In a previous age, Sauron would have done that himself. Of course, the Witch King, like the rest of the Nazgul, was completely under Sauron's control, but still it was a step back for him. And his vulnerability also affected things. It meant that even when he did have a physical body he could use, like at the end of the Third Age, he stayed back in safety in Barad-dûr, and it meant that he was even afraid of some opponents. He was certainly wary of some opponents in earlier ages, but fear was far from his default setting. Indeed, he seemed happy to face people head-to-head if needed. But when Aragorn recounts his encounter with Sauron through the Palantiri in the main story, he says this: "Now, in the very hour of his, Sauron's, great designs, the heir of Isildur and the sword are revealed, for I showed the blade reforged to him. He is not so mighty yet that he is above fear. Nay, doubt ever gnaws him." Doubt ever gnawing at Sauron is perhaps an image we weren't expecting. What was he afraid of? Defeat, certainly, but even before that, that they might get the ring and challenge him. He knew that some were powerful enough to challenge him if they had it. Which brings us to one of the most important parts of Sauron's psychology: his inability to understand that some people didn't want what he wanted, that some people valued love and loyalty and friendship and strength over power and control. He assumed that everyone who got hold of the ring would use it to gain even more power. The idea that someone might want to destroy the ring never crossed his mind. As Gandalf says in the Council of Elrond when trying to persuade people of the best course of action: "Let folly be our cloak, a veil before the eyes of the enemy, for he is very wise, and weighs all things to a nicety in the scales of his malice. But the only measure that he knows is desire, desire for power, and so he judges all hearts. Into his heart the thought will not enter that any will refuse it, that having the ring we may seek to destroy it. If we seek this, we shall put him out of reckoning." Gandalf's understanding of Sauron's mind in this is the turning point of the entire plot. It is how he can persuade people that destroying the ring is possible, because Sauron simply won't be expecting it. And when the end is near, after the Battle of the Pelennor Fields, when the captains of the West are deciding what to do next, he uses that understanding once more. Sauron will assume anyone who has the ring will want to use it to grab power, and already fears Aragorn and suspects he may have the ring, so his doubt will be growing, even as we speak here. His eye is now straining towards us, blind almost to all else that is moving, so we must keep it. Therein lies all our hope. This, then, is my counsel. We have not the ring. In wisdom or great folly, it has been sent away to be destroyed, lest it destroy us. Without it, we cannot by force defeat his force, but we must at all costs keep his eye from his true peril. We cannot achieve victory by arms, but by arms we can give the ring-bearer his only chance, frail though it be. As Aragorn has begun, so we must go on. We must push Sauron to his last throw. We must call out his hidden strength so that he shall empty his land. We must march out to meet him at once. We must make ourselves the bait, though his jaws should close on us. He will take that bait in hope and in greed, for he will think that in such rashness he sees the pride of the new ringlord, and he will say, "So, he pushes out his neck too soon and too far. Let him come on. And behold, I will have him in a trap from which he cannot escape. There I will crush him, and what he has taken in his insolence shall be mine again forever." We must walk open-eyed into that trap, with courage, but small hope for ourselves. It is to Gandalf's credit that he understands Sauron so well. Without his insight into what Sauron is thinking, the story would have been very different. And this shows that, far from a two-dimensional figure, an understanding of Sauron's deeper psychological profile is actually what proved crucial in The Lord of the Rings. Sauron was truly evil, but he was also once good. and started out his evil plans with the best of intentions. He invaded Middle-earth with mighty armies, but that was never his preferred way of working. He was a control freak who wanted to do everything himself, but was forced to rely on others. He was arrogant and filled with hatred, but also afraid, and doubt ever gnawed at him. He is a complex, layered character. He could not be further from a two-dimensional bad guy. If you'd like to see more Lord of the Rings videos like this, there's a link to my playlist on the left of your screen now. Or to support this channel, thank you. There's a link to my Patreon page on the right of your screen. Thanks for watching. That's all for this time. I'll see you again soon.